This is a special program for the Media Summit on Climate Change, Information and Communication Technology and Disaster Risk Reduction in Jakarta. This broadcast is part of a trial of the International Radio for Disaster Relief Project to test shortwave frequencies that can be used for emergency broadcasting in disasters.
These swirling, vicious winds, these soaring temperatures.
This is terrible. This is war zone.
When a disaster strikes, a cyclone, an earthquake, war, famine, we become hungry for information.
Like you see, completely destroyed.
We call friends, we turn to the internet, social media, television, radio, to find out what's going on.
Miracles do happen, and yet we are just still hoping against hope. We continue to hope and pray for survivors.
Every day, journalists report from the front line of conflicts and natural disasters. They describe the devastation, the suffering, the struggles of the relief effort. Painting a picture for the wider world to understand what's happening can be important. But it's not the only useful role that the media can play in humanitarian emergencies. In this half-hour programme, we'll be looking at the life-saving role that media can play to directly help people facing humanitarian crises through dedicated emergency broadcasting. Coming up...
Please move away from objects that may fall on you. If you're using your cooker, please extinguish the flame.
How broadcasters in Japan defied the violence of the 2011 earthquake to help their audiences. And how a radio station in the Philippines became a lifeline for survivors of Typhoon Haiyan.
And Radyo Bakdaw.
Radyo Bakdaw. Here to help you, help.
First, as you heard earlier, this program is being transmitted as part of a trial to test the use of shortwave frequencies for emergencies. Let's learn more from the HFCC, a group involved in coordinating channels for shortwave broadcasting. Here's the HFCC chairman, Aldrich Chip.
There are 10 international shortwave bands, and in spite of some cuts of shortwave broadcasting, many bands are still overloaded. And the aim of our project is to identify and select dedicated frequency channels, completely free from interference, in such a way that the global shortwave coordination community will reserve them permanently for disaster mitigation broadcasting.
And why is it important to have these shortwave channels pre-designated for emergency broadcasts?
Well, that's because the use of shortwave has some very important advantages. For example, the transmitter of All India Radio, located at Bangalore, that is also taking part in this trial, has a transmitting antenna pointing in the southeast direction. That transmitter alone is capable of covering Malayan Peninsula, Indonesia, southern Philippines, and the coverage then goes down towards New Guinea and northwest part of Australia. And the antennas and transmitters of other participants in the trial are going to provide comparably big coverage areas. And what is equally or even more important, the transmitting facilities can be far removed by hundreds or even thousands of kilometers from the disaster zone that is suffering from a total communication and information blackout.
Let's look more now at the role that broadcasters can play in helping in disasters, whether it's via shortwave or other channels such as local FM. Imogen Wall was until recently Communication with Communities Coordinator for OCHA, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. She says when people are in crisis, it's critical they get the kind of information that could save them.
People desperately need news. They always want to know just what is going on, very simply. But they also need the information. They need to make decisions about what to do in that situation, how to protect themselves, where to go, how to look after their children. And both are essential services for those affected by crisis.
The growing recognition of the important role that communication can play in crisis led to the birth a few years ago of the CDAC network. which pulls together humanitarian, media and other agencies working to strengthen communication with disaster-affected communities. Brendan Gormley, formerly the head of Britain's Disasters Emergency Committee, is now the chair of CDAC Network.
Communication is the most important element of an effective humanitarian response. The media has a responsibility both to hold powerful actors to account, but also to inform and to educate. Journalists can play several roles. They can play the role of holding the humanitarian system to account, but they also have the role in engaging with local audiences and ensuring that key life-saving messages about aid, where people are properly and effectively communicated. And extracting from the humanitarian system key life-saving information, and just as importantly, talking with survivors and their leadership, and as it were, acting as a powerful megaphone of their cares and concerns, so that the humanitarian system is in a position to get crucial information and is in a position to listen effectively.
Very strong seismic movements have been observed over a wide area.
2011, Japan is hit by a triple disaster, an earthquake, a tsunami, and damage to a nuclear power plant. Keiichi Saito is the director of High FM Radio in Tomei City, one of the areas affected by the quake.
Seconds before the earthquake struck, we heard a loud warning, so we knew an earthquake was about to hit. Shortly after the violent shaking started, it was so strong we could barely stand. Once it calmed down, we rushed outside to look at the damage, which was severe, and there was no power across the city. As a radio station, we wanted to keep members of the community calm. So we repeated warnings to stop driving and to extinguish the gas if you had stoves or cookers on.
I'm in the Ha FM station, feeling strong shaking. If you're in a car, please stay calm. Slow down, stop the car. Please move away from objects that may fall on you. If you're using your cooker, please extinguish the flame.
And for days after the quake, High FM's broadcast remained people's only way of getting information.
There was a huge power cut. All households were without power, so TVs didn't work and laptops soon ran out of battery. So all sources of information were unavailable. There was literally no news coming in. Radio became the only source of information. So we started broadcasting the Tome City Hall announcements. For example, repairs to the water main supply, what distributions were taking place, etc. For 8 days, there was no power in Tome City, so we really focused our efforts to keep the information flowing on a 24-hour basis, so staff worked shifts to do so.
Keiichi Saito and his team were able to react so quickly because they prepared well in advance, with a supply of fuel to run the generator, an earthquake-resistant studio, and well-trained staff.
Tome City is in Miyagi, a region that suffers from very strong earthquakes, so we carried out training in advance to make sure our team could react quickly and stay on air regardless of the disaster. As part of our emergency preparedness measures before the disaster took place, we decided who would do what in an emergency. The presenters would rush to the studio. The male members of staff would rush to the city hall and the fire station and gather information and the latest updates, while I would stay at the radio station and direct operations. So, when the disaster struck, I didn't need to give orders. People quickly rushed to their positions. It worked perfectly. I was so pleased.
This was just one example of how many broadcasters across Japan sprung into action to help their audiences. The country isn't new to disasters and has invested heavily in earthquake preparedness. Lois Appleby authored an Internews report on the role of communication in the earthquake.
Early warning systems in Japan were absolutely incredible. They're very sophisticated, and it's a $500 million US dollar system that was set up in 2007 that undoubtedly saved hundreds of thousands of lives. It issued very quick warning messages via TV, radio, mobile phones, to government offices, to heavy machinery operators, to switch off machinery just before the earthquake happened. And there were tsunami warnings as well, issuing evacuation notices that they undoubtedly saved lives and got people to safety in time. Those people with access to internet and to power and to social networks found it very useful to be able to find loved ones and to contact people to check they're okay and to find out information. But the majority of the people who are the worst affected, that is the elderly population in the northeast of Japan, in predominantly fishing villages with declining populations, actually relied on very low-tech, community-based solutions to get their information. In a lot of places, it was only radio that was on air that was available to get information. According to a Japan Broadcasting Survey, radio was voted the most useful source of information from the day of the disaster right through to the end of the first week. TVs, internet just wasn't even an option. And people without local radio actually were in a complete black hole in terms of information.
Noriyuki Shikata was the Director of Global Communications at the Prime Minister's office at the time of the disaster. For him, different sectors of the media all have a role to play in crises.
The early warning system of the government can automatically interrupt TV and radio broadcasts before the quake fully strikes. So that's one way. The media, especially TV or radio, have a public purpose. And especially public broadcasting stations like NHK has a legal responsibility to communicate those pieces of information. But it's not fully limited to public broadcasting stations only. And I think Japanese media in many cases responded to those needs. Emergency temporary radio stations being established, which served the critical needs of local population. And it is really important, to combine the roles of different media, national media, local media, and social media.
Lois Appleby agrees.
Towns were completely cut off with basic services. So if you imagine if you have access to a national TV news network, actually what you need to know is when is gas or water going to arrive in my village, not what's happening in the next region. This information gap was filled by the local radio stations.
A reminder that you're listening to a special broadcast on the role of radio in humanitarian emergencies. This programme is part of a trial to test shortwave frequencies that can be used for broadcasting in disasters. As we heard earlier, investing in solid infrastructure and other preparedness measures can help make sure broadcasters are able to function in an emergency. But what about when all communication systems in the country go down? In Myanmar, also known as Burma, Cyclone Nargis made landfall in May 2008, causing catastrophic destruction. The BBC's Burmese service reached the population through shortwave, which can be beamed in from afar, regardless of damage that may have been done to in-country infrastructure. Tinhata Swe is the head of the BBC Burmese service.
In a disaster like that, the infrastructure is affected. So there is no mobile phone connection, there's no internet connection. So people rely on shortwave radio. What the people ask is, can you bring shortwave radio? We need shortwave radio. And they started listening to radio regularly, especially the weather forecast, because they are so afraid. They were so ill-prepared when this cyclone hit the area. We are moving towards digital journalism, as we all know. We are now exploring new platforms like having information on the mobile phone, having information on the social media. However, when the connectivity is down, then shortwave is still very reliable for people to listen.
Living Today, Stronger Tomorrow, the name of the special BBC Lifeline programme which ran over many months to help the Burmese people recover from the cyclone.
People were very heartbroken, nervous, panicked, didn't know what to do. So we set up Lifeline programmes for the victims of a cyclone. We did over 100 programmes and we put it out on shortwave radio. Later, we got feedback from the audience, and they were very grateful that the essential basic information is being provided over the shortwave radio by the BBC, and that was very much appreciated. And also, it gives them some kind of comfort that there are people out there somewhere really care for them and giving all this information out to them. On every transmission, we read out a number of people who were missing and also a number of people who wrote to us that, they were still alive. So by reading out these names, the family discovered that their loved ones are, still alive. So that was very rewarding for us. Another very rewarding feeling is that the victims, when they wrote to us, that the little information we give, like try and drink boiled water, make sure that the water you drink is safe to drink. And that little information, it helps them and it saves their lives.
A critical part of this kind of programming is not just to give people information, but also to give them a voice. Back to Ocha's Imogen Wall.
Nobody likes to be preached at. We all know it, and people affected by crisis are the same. They're also being bombarded with all sorts of experiences and all sorts of information from all sorts of different places. If you are clear and direct, then that will help. But also, later on, getting more creative with formats, creating ways in which you can listen and have a dialogue is essential if you're going to connect with your audience and if you're actually going to be able to get them the information that they need. You won't be able to produce good programming unless you are also listening and engaging in a conversation with your audience.
And this approach was integral to a project to help survivors of last year's Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines.
Ha in command. Diin ka man, katambayayong mo ang Radyo Bakdaw.
Radyo Bakdaw, here to help you help each other.
Ini ang Radyo Bakdaw 92.9 FM.
Radyo Bakdaw 92.9 FM, the best and the only radio station in town.
Inakausap lang kita kapag ako'y nangangailangan, baka may kakilala.
After the typhoon hit, knocking out virtually all communications in some parts of the country, the organisation Internews worked with local DJs in Guyane, one of the most affected areas, and trained them in how to do humanitarian programming and set up a special broadcast.
Radyo Bakdaw 92.9 FM.
Jessa Cabonegro was one of the presenters. This is her talking at the time.
So ito na mong giniihimo.
What we do is we encourage people to send us text messages about their concerns, problems or complaints, and we tackle those on air. We go to the communities and personally ask them what they need. We ask questions like, do you still need relief? Or would you rather receive construction materials instead? We're messengers from the people to the international organisations. This feedback helps humanitarian organisations know exactly the kind of assistance communities need.
And local listeners said Jessa and her colleagues helped them through the very tough times they faced after the typhoon.
It was really very difficult. We wanted to reach out to our families after the storm, but we had no way of contacting them.
We didn't know when relief goods would be delivered to our barangay. We couldn't even tell what time it was. We now listen to the news. Today was a good example. We knew of the relief distribution because of Radyo Bakdaw. Very helpful.
Whenever we have problems, we go to the radio. And they give us answers, they provide solutions.
This is your Vice Mayor,
Jerry Sambayaw Kasin. Akon igkasitak lubanon, ayaw kawarayan hin.
Meanwhile, in a different part of the country, another radio station was set up by First Response Radio, a network that trains up local staff and aims to get to air within 72 hours of an emergency. Its international coordinator is Mike Adams.
I happened to be in Manila when the storm blew through, and it took 72 hours to just determine that a response was needed. The communications were down and affected so badly, we couldn't actually get a report out of the most affected community in Tacloban City. But as soon as we heard that the government needed assistance and there was a call for mass communications for the public, within 72 hours, our team was on the ground broadcasting from the top of City Hall in Tacloban City, the most affected city in the typhoon.
Hanapin ang bukas na pinto ng panibagong pagkakataon sa gitna ng krisis at kahinaan.
The community just wanted things to come back to normal and to have a voice, to be there, a voice of encouragement. In the evening, we played music and we connected with the audience and the community. During the daytime, it was humanitarian information, how to connect with shelter, food, water and healthcare, the top government priorities for the time. So people were getting useful information, but they wanted to recover and be encouraged and relax as well. And so I think it really met a double need there. The UN Women's Group, UNFPA, said that not enough people were attending their clinics. The women that they were targeting just weren't getting the message. When they announced it over First Response Radio, immediately, the very next day, the numbers of women coming to the special clinics doubled and tripled, especially targeting the pregnant women and mothers with young babies. And so they were just adamant that having radio really increased their ability to serve the community.
And what's it like for the journalists who end up actually making these programs? Are they having to make quite a big switch between what they normally do as journalists and then this quite specialized kind of programming?
Yes, it takes a bit of adjusting to understand and focus on the new role of radio in disaster. Many of them come from, as you say, traditional radio journalist roles or community radio, or we have partners from government radio joining us. So for some of them, it's a bigger switch than others, where instead of maybe being adversarial against the government, they have to learn to cooperate, walk alongside, think about what the community needs. What kind of information does the community need today? And that's the main imperative in humanitarian radio. But by the time we've done our training class and we've spent a few days practicing doing this, it all comes together.
As Mike Adams pointed out, the value of radio is not just that it can provide practical life-saving information, such as in this spot on safe drinking water, but even hearing music and a reassuring voice can have a very powerful effect on survivors, boosting morale and helping people to feel that they're not alone.
It is now 7:30. You are tuned in to 98.7 FM First Response Radio, powered by FEBC. Tonight is a very special night. And if you are a constant listener of FRR, you know that we love the men in uniform because they are here to serve the people of Tacloban.
Let's hear from Imogen Wall again.
In the weeks and months after disaster, people go through terrible crises. Their lives change completely. And they are very traumatized. So anything you can do to help keep spirits up and help morale through that is really important. And there again, media plays a very important role. I remember very clearly when I was working in Indonesia after the tsunami and I was handling a radio distribution project, a community leader tracked me down at the office and came in and said, "I hear you're giving away radios. Can we have some in my camp?" And I said, "Why do you want radios?" And he said, "We're so bored. We've been sitting here for months. No one's got work, nothing to do all day. We just need a little bit of music, a little bit of distraction, something new to think about, something new to talk about." And that's what media meant to us. And I've never forgotten it, because it really brought home to me the psychological value of communication and of media.
And with that in mind, let's end this program on Radio in Emergencies with a song that was broadcast to the people of Tacloban. Tindog Kital means rise together in Waray, the local language.
Maupay ang katindog na doon. Tindog kita.